This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart along with Dave Bourne. And thank you for joining us for your noon hour. We have a terrific guest here today, so stick with us. I don't care if you've got errands to do. I don't care if you're due back at work. This is the hour you want to be listening to local talk here on KYKN. In the studio with me today, joining us is Vance Day. And I'm not even going to talk about it Monday or anything else. I'm just going to start talking to Vance.
Right.
So,
forgive me.
Because Vance has a lot to say. We have a lot of things we want to hear from him. Fascinating Oregon history. We're talking before the hour about his family history and how long it goes back and what roots the days have in Oregon. Vance, welcome to the studio.
Appreciate being here.
It's nice to have you. So I was sitting here and I'm talking to Mr. Day and I said, so you were a practicing attorney here in town, right?
True.
Successful practice, well-regarded. And then you made some lame brain decision. You're going to decide to make be a judge.
You know, the person who challenged me to do that was Judge Buck Compton. Now, if that name means anything to you, I'm sure it means something to your listeners. Band of Brothers.
Okay.
You know, Parachute Infantry Regiment 506. Buck Compton was a lieutenant who won the Silver Star on D-Day. And he became a very good friend of mine. He convicted Sirhan Sirhan for the murder of Robert Kennedy.
Wow.
And just a wonderful prosecutor. Governor Reagan put him on the bench in California. He became one of my very best friends. And he kept on bugging me. Vance, will you become a judge? And I said, look, I'm former chairman of the Oregon Republican Party. And all our governors are Democrats. I mean, Buck, that's not going to happen. You know, governors appoint circuit court judges. It's just not going to happen. And he just kept bugging me. And so I put my name in the hat and I got selected, which floored everybody. So that's
so
what happened.
What do you test that to? Well, how did you get selected? Did you have an expertise that the bench was missing? Because that happens sometimes.
Well, yeah, and that probably is a putative reason, I should say. You know, I think, you know, people who know politics know that there's some trading in the background. Okay, we'll put that ding-dong Vance Day on the bench if you give us, you know, that kind of thing. But they did need a circuit court judge here in Marion County who had civil law experience. So I was a civil litigator for 20 years and had a successful practice here in town. It's now Adams, Hill, and Hess. At the time, it was Adams, Day
Hill. Day Hill and Hess.
Right.
Oh, Day Hill, right.
Yeah, right. So no commercial there. Adams, Hill, and Hess. Let me give you their number. Anyway, so they needed that on the bench because, frankly, 14 circuit court judges in really what is regarded as the most powerful circuit in Oregon. And at the time, 12 of them were former government attorneys or prosecutors. Mm. And that's not a good mix because all of the cases in Marion County all the government cases that get filed usually come to Marion County. And when you have former government attorneys ruling on government cases, the public needs to know that somebody who's not a government guy or gal is going to be ruling on those things. And so that's part of the reason I think I was selected.
And there were a couple of local attorneys as well from a different law firm that got appointed in the last 5-10 years. Mm-hmm. And
Channing Bennett is, and that was one of the reasons that we really pushed Channing to do that job, because he's a very successful civil attorney, not a criminal attorney. Which really was helpful.
And you have to have people that know divorces and family law as mm-hmm. well. And mm-hmm. sometimes if they're prosecutors, they may have no experience in that area, and they're asked to judge on that kind of
thing. Exactly.
Yeah. All right, so how'd you enjoy your time on the bench?
I love being a judge. I mean, we were able to start a very successful veterans treatment court. My wife and I drafted a grant to the United States government. They gave us about almost $400,000 to start that program. Very successful. I worked on the criminal side and learned that, frankly, that was interesting for me. A lot of interesting cases, tried a lot of cases. During my practice, I tried between 300 and 400 cases in jury and bench trial. And then as a judge, it was a real privilege to work with the juries. Loved that work. I can't say I miss it necessarily because it was really tough work. I mean, there are things that you see and you hear and you have to deal with which stick with you. The average time for a judge in Oregon before they leave the bench is 7 years.
Whoa, that's
it? Yeah. And the reason for that is it's vicarious trauma, because you're seeing, I mean, you have to see everything a jury sees, and you see it all the time. And so if it's a sex case, you have to see what the jury sees. And so a lot of people who are lawyers because they have good memories. Mm. Their brains work well with regard to memory. And so that stuff is hard to wash away. And it just vicariously, it begins to build up and people want to do something else.
Boy, I had a very small experience on a jury, and it was a sexual with a minor kind of case where there was a predator that had groomed and blah, blah, blah. And this happened and that happened. And that was traumatic enough. And it was one day or 2 days.
Yeah. Imagine doing a 3-week trial where, you know, you're seeing the videos and you have to deal with that, or the murder trials that we have to do. I mean, some of that, you know, and I was a former news reporter and a news anchor over in the Middle East. And so I saw a lot in that, you know, era of my existence, you know, and my experience. So some of those things didn't surprise me. But you look at, you know, judges have to deal with a lot. And I think the public doesn't realize the amount of casework that they, you know, really work through.
Do you think it was harder work than being in private practice?
Yes. Wow. I mean, different.
So way to go, make less money for more work. That's a good job. We're talking to Vance Day, circuit court judge, local attorney, former president of the Oregon Republican Party, and now president of Promise Keepers. And we're going to get to that. And this is why, folks, you have to stay with us the whole hour, not just on your way to pick up your lunch. You're going to stick with us the whole hour and listen to Vance. Or you can pick up the podcast later, because Dave Bourne will put it on the website and you can listen to the entire interview. All right. So a lot less money, a lot more trauma, emotional trauma and headaches. And it was really, really good for 4 years. And then you got in trouble.
Yeah, I guess that's a good way to put it.
You got yourself in trouble.
So refresh everyone. What happened?
And if this, you know, if it weren't so tragic, Vance, it would be bemusing, where someone could get in trouble for not doing something that's not in their job description. That's the part that just blew me away. When you know that this is politically motivated, and you know it's personal, and you know it is the audacity of the moment that you need, that Vance Day needs to pay the price for not doing something that is not within his job description.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the sad thing. That was, I think, as I look back over the last 4.5 years, that's the thing that causes me the most concern, is that those, and I don't want to be too pejorative, negative, but there is a cast of people who view themselves as the government elite. They know better than the rest of us yahoos, the deplorables throughout the United States. Mm-hmm. And they're going to tell us what to do and when to do it. And they don't regard the First Amendment, the rights that an individual has under the First Amendment, is really that valuable, frankly. Because if you disagree with them, then they will come after you and try to destroy your life because you don't agree with them. And that's not the way our constitutional republic was designed. You can have, you know, hard-fought political battles, but you should never attempt to destroy another person's life simply because they don't do what you want them to do.
We're talking to Vance Day, and in case you're not familiar or it's slipped your mind, there were complaints issued about Judge Day because he opted to not do same-sex marriages, not perform same-sex marriages. And even more ridiculous about this is he's not required to do same-sex marriages, and he just politely declined and said that might be a better fit for other judges who want to do those kinds of things. And it's not even a requirement of your job.
Nope.
And that's the situation we're talking about, and that's, you know, starts this cavalcade of how do we get rid of Vance Day off the bench, to, you know, kind of motion. And I just thought it was preposterous that on its face it should have just been dismissed. When you're just making an option, and like, I'm not going to do it. It's not like you were even doing weddings, right?
Well,
you didn't even.
I quietly recused myself because I knew the federal judge reasonably well, who got the case before the Supreme Court did. And being that he desired to marry his partner at some point in time, it was pretty clear kind of the way that case was going to go. So I made the decision quietly to remove myself from marriage totally. And when it came out in the paper that he had made the decision that, that the Oregon Constitution had violated the United States Constitution, that by saying that marriage is between a man and a woman, which was voted in 1996 by the public, I said on that day, I told my staff quietly, look, if a same-sex couple calls, please refer them to this other judge who will be glad to marry them. And then remove, I mean, we just made a plan to, I'll finish off the ones on my docket because I didn't want to run away from those and cause people problems. Mm-hmm. That would be rude and wrong. But I also knew as a, frankly, a Republican white guy, old white guy, by the way, you know, in my 50s, a Christian, somebody who is outspoken about my faith and somebody who is conservative, that, that if it became known that that, and I had recused myself, then it's like waving a red flag in front of an angry bull. It's just not a smart thing to do.
All right, we're going to have to take a break. We're talking to Vance Day. He's the president of Promise Keepers, a nationwide ministry now. We're going to hear about that before the hour is up. And when we come back, we're going to talk about how what should have been a freedom of faith and religion part of our constitutional effort somehow becomes a freedom of sexual orientation and lack of free speech. Stick with us. I'm Brent DeHart here with Dave Warren on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Color Tile of Salem.
Welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. Brent DeHart here with Dave Warren, and Vance Day joins us here in our studio, and we're talking about the Establishment Clause a little bit in preference to this segment. People forget the second half of the Establishment Clause, freedom of religion in the Constitution. It's like, shall enact a law prohibiting the free exercise thereof, mm-hmm. of your religion. It's not, freedom from religion. It's freedom of religion. So a man has a man and a woman. We citizens have a right to have a faith. And you kind of fell victim at a bad time in history to have some faith, Mr. Day. Would you tell us a little bit about your trial starting, what, about 4 years ago?
Yeah, it was about 4 years ago. The state came to me essentially and said, well, and I, there's a lot of history behind it, but I made the choice to recuse myself from same-sex marriage. That eventually became known through a colleague who wasn't very supportive of my position, shall we say. She viewed a variety of issues that I have strong beliefs on, as that I was a effing idiot, I think is what she called me, and she essentially whispered in the
very eloquent
here. Yeah, well, I've been called that before. It doesn't seem to bother me. So when the state decided to look into a different matter that I'd reported myself and been asked to, and I said, sure, I'll report. It was relating to a veteran and a gun, and he was shown a gun in my presence when I was working on a wood stove to try to get him heat during the depth of the winter, which I was allowed to do, and we'll go through all that. But long of the short is, or rather the short of the long is, the state came after me and basically said, you know, if you resign, none of this will happen to you. I mean, we'll just, you know, it'll just all go away. And I said, I didn't do anything wrong, so I'm not resigning. And so then they ran me through a two-week ethics trial, recommended to the Oregon Supreme Court that I'd be thrown off the bench. The Oregon Supreme Court, we took it to them and appealed, essentially. They had to make that decision. They took a long time. They decided that I was less than credible when they didn't review all the evidence. They left out key pieces of eyewitness testimony. And so they suspended me from the bench. I still wouldn't back down. I took it to the United States Supreme Court, which made the folks here a little bit upset. And so the day before a statute of limitations ran on a felony of aiding and abetting a felon in a possession of a firearm, they indicted me for that. And so my fifth great-grandfather was the first judge in Oregon, and I was the first judge to be ever indicted in Oregon, which rather not have happened, but, you know, I've observed and been involved in politics for a long time, and it didn't surprise me, frankly. I talked to my attorneys about it. I said, you know, they're not going to drop this thing. They're going to come after me and try to just pound me into death unless I give up somehow. And I'm not giving up. Just not going to do that. It's not my nature to step back from a bully. I've got scars on my head because of that when I was young. I'm just not going to do that. And so, and my family's the same way. My wife just said, no, we're going to push everything we own into the center of the table, and we're going after these people. We're not going to back down. So we sold our home. We sold our commercial interest. Our legal bills were just over $1 million, and they're pretty much paid now. This next couple weeks, we'll get that taken care of. Thanks the Lord.
Wow.
And I wouldn't give it up.
Are they ongoing? Is there more yet to fight?
Well, you know, the day that the Supreme Court, 30 days before my criminal trial, they decided to dump this 92-page opinion into the public. I asked them to wait till my criminal trial's done, because I'm going to win that, which we did. But don't go dumping, you know, an opinion which could be negative right before a criminal trial. Why would you do that? Mm-hmm. And yet they chose to do that. And the day they did that, I got a letter from the Oregon Department of Revenue saying, oh, by the way, we haven't reviewed your taxes in 42 years, but we're going to do it now.
Oh, what a coincidence.
And the same day that they did that, I got a call from the Oregon State Bar Association said, you know, we're going to try to take your license now. Now, we beat that, and we essentially, you know, won the criminal case. I've been exonerated. They didn't have any evidence. They had to dismiss the case. So the only thing that still hangs out there is I'm fighting with the Department of Revenue on a little chippy issue, but that's kind of fun. So
you still have your attorney's license.
I do.
And you were not removed from the bench. You were suspended.
I was. And I fulfilled the term. I chose not to run again. I had a lot of friends who said, you know, stick it in their face, run again. And because the people will elect you in Marion County, they believe. I mean, and you know, that's the wonderful thing, Brent. Is I had people who disagree with me totally on politics. We never get along on politics, who came up to me, a fellow attorneys, and said, this is a bunch of bovine stuff that you're going through, and this is all political. And they're right, it was. It's a political prosecution. I had judges come up to me and say that. How can the state do that? But see, that's what should cause people who are listening pause. Is that in a constitutional republic, our rights are inalienable. They're given to us by God. That means that the government elites don't get to tell us how we get to use them. And that's exactly what they did with me. If you don't celebrate same-sex marriage, this is what will happen to you. Mm. And I said, but I have liberty of conscience. What are you talking about? Well, not in our book you don't, because you're a conservative, and conservatives really don't have the same rights that we, you know, leftists do. That's what that's about.
And it is interesting how people see how horrible it is when a big business, a big corporation has deep pockets, and they're going to draw out your litigation, and they're going to crush the little guy, right? They're going to drag out litigation until they run out of money, and they're just going to hammer them. You're never going to get anywhere against a big corporation mm-hmm. with all unlimited legal fees. And now, in your case, that big corporation is the state of Oregon.
That's right. That's exactly the way it
works. And that's the bully. And that's the people who have as many attorneys to bill as many hours as they need to get what they want, and that is to prosecute you.
And then on the second day of trial to stand up and say, well, Your Honor, we've decided to dismiss the case against Judge Day. After 2 years of being under indictment and hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal bills, the state just stands up and says, oh, we don't have our evidence. We're dismissing. Uh-huh. And there's nothing you can do. There's nothing I could do. I can't sue the state of Oregon for malicious prosecution because the United States Supreme Court has said that's a very, very high bar. I'm sure there's emails out there that somehow show stuff. But, you know, Brent, my wife and I are not the type of people who are going to, one, be bitter about this kind of stuff because it doesn't do anything to them. It just hurts us. Why? You know, we're going to go on with our lives. And I'm an Oregonian and through and through. I love my state. And it breaks my heart that the politics, you know, from frankly the left, have become so destructive here. I mean, our state is heading off a precipice in so many different areas, and people just don't seem to care. Mm. That's why I became a judge, because I cared. I still care. I'm still going to live in this state. I still want to be involved, but that'll take a different form.
We're talking to Vance Day, local attorney, become circuit court judge. Quite a trial. He's experienced a series of trials, we should say, but a personal trial of fortitude, right? And now he's the president of Promise Keepers. We're going to get to that in the next segment. And Promise Keepers is a nationwide Christian organization. And I can't wait to hear about it because I know just enough about Promise Keepers, but how you got into this role and so forth and what you're going to do for them and so forth. We're going to give you an opportunity to talk about that. Did you consider going back into the private sector, rejoin your former colleagues in private law practice?
Yeah, sure. I love the law. I revere how our nation functions under a rule of law. I will maintain my law license, and I may use it at some point in time. But no, I had a calling out of Oregon, and I work now in Colorado Springs. I commute from Central Oregon, where I live, in Redmond. And so I'm down in Colorado. I travel quite a bit. I miss Oregon, but I don't miss, you know, litigation, and I was a busy litigator, has become more of a young man, woman's game. It's tough work. It's just tough work. And I think we get into our 50s and 60s and start looking at grandkids and saying, you know, maybe I ought to spend a little more time with them.
Maybe I don't have that much fight left in me, right? Whatever competitiveness I had at 20 and 25, I don't have anymore. Some things are just, well, I could fight or I could go play with this one. That is funny. How do you recover? Because it's so draining. And you seem to have a pretty good attitude and a pretty long perspective on things. How do you recover financially after having to defend yourself for such a long period of time, and then no one's there to say, I'm sorry, and here's some of your legal fees back.
Yeah.
When's the book come out, Pants?
Right?
Yeah. I don't think I'll be doing that anytime soon. I'm too busy to even write what I need to write for Promise Keepers. I don't think that it depends on what you value. If I valued money, I probably never would become a judge. So money is a tool in my worldview. And so whether I have it or not is not the issue. I know who I am. I am the son of, you know, a great father and a great mother, and I have faith, and I'm here for a purpose. And my purpose doesn't necessarily include making a bunch of money. If it does, great. I'll use it for what it's intended to be used for. But I don't take my identity in what I own or how much money I make. I mean, that's a stupid thing to do.
Wish more of society would feel that way.
No, it's a false spectrum of value. It just is. Now, we never would have been able to sustain the constant pounding from the state financially, even though we, you know, sold everything to try to do that. And that's not a victim statement. One, I'm not a victim. I chose to fight back because I believed that that was the right thing to do. And I believed that those who agreed with me would stand beside me. I was shocked with having 25 plus thousand people across the United States send $5, $10 to the Defend Judge Day Legal Fund. I mean,
wow.
That's the only way that we sustained, we were able to support the battle. I mean, they raised enough money that plus what we paid was able to sustain the battle. And I mean, 25,000 people across the United States that I don't know. I mean, it's humbling. Wow. I still try to write every single person back personally. I'm about 600 letters behind. And so I really got to start working on that. But the American spirit, the American sense of injustice when they see it, I just love that about Americans. They stand up and say, no, I want to help. That's wrong. And that was one of the beautiful things. I wouldn't have given this, despite the pain and the difficulty in seeing things said about you that were untrue and, you know, on newspapers and radio and all that and television, I wouldn't give up the last 4.5 years. I saw a different side of Americans, which encouraged me. And I also saw a different side of the God that I have faith in. Because when he shows up on the battlefield, when you learn that just one person who stands with God is in the majority, I couldn't lose. So I know that joy of Matthew James 1, verse 2, that you consider it all joy when you encounter various trials for the testing of your faith, because it gives you an upgrade. It gives you perseverance and faith and understanding.
Vance, I can't imagine how you didn't drive them crazy. I'm going to fight you. I'm never going to stop fighting you. And I'm going to be joyful about it. I'm going to follow. I know I have a foundation that will not fail me. Even if I lose, I still win. Side of righteousness. Awesome. I'm talking to Vance Day. We're walking him here in our studios here at KYKN on Newsmakers. And we're going to come right back and listen to his new role with Promise Keepers as a president of this national organization. So stick with us. This is Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by your friends at Sylvan Learning Center.
And welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. We're talking to Vance Day. He's the president of Promise Keepers, amongst many other things. This is a complex and interesting man. So we're going to extend the hour and push right through Bill O'Reilly. We're just going to circumvent him.
That'll go over well.
Just maybe not. Okay, no. Maybe we'll just have to have Vance back.
Yes.
He lives in Redmond now, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So was an attorney, was a judge, came off the bench. How did you get involved with Promise Keepers?
Yeah, there's a circuitous route to that. I became part, in the midst of this big battle, I was teaching adjunct at Corbin University, a great local university, just fine people, great students. And there was a fellow on the board who came and visited my courtroom, and he just became a good friend of mine over time. And he was a former LA cop, and then left that to get into real estate, and then retired at 45, didn't need to work, from Portland. So we had something in common because that's where I was born and raised. He invited me to become part of a prayer group on Monday mornings at 5:30. They held it in Denver, and I appeared by phone. And so for the last almost 3 years, that's what we do every morning at 5:30. I spend time, about 8 guys in prayer. And out of that, one of the guys was on that prayer group is a guy named Raleigh Washington, who was at the time president of Promise Keepers. And he was in his late 70s, early 80s, and was wanting to retire. He asked Harrison.
Slacker.
Yeah, slacker.
Just 80, okay.
Yeah. After 20 years in the military and being a colonel and all that stuff, I mean, you know, he just wasn't doing much. And the long or the short is that, because I always make a long story, Brent, you know me better than that. So... Ken Harrison ended up being chairman of the board of Promise Keepers. And I won't go through essentially what happened, but it was in kind of a dormant phase, but had a great history of helping men understand their identity and therefore their purpose and their destiny. I mean, that's what Promise Keepers does, is remind men and bring about catalytic events. You get 80,000 men together in an NFL stadium and you sing the same songs and you hear the same message and you see men repent. Men change and they understand that we're created to be servant leaders, servant kings, if you will, that we are supposed to be out there sacrificing ourselves for those, our wives, our children, our community. So that's what Promise Keeper's message is. And so Ken decided through a variety of decisions that he had to make to rebirth Promise Keepers. And he was looking for somebody who was good at deconstructing some legal problems and reconstructing an organization. I had some of that in my background, operations. I'm a little bit OCD when it comes to organization. And so
you're probably the only attorney like that.
Well, it makes for good trial work. I mean, you know, you come in prepared.
George Jennings, are you listening? George does great work. He's a retired attorney. You know George probably very
love
well.
George, yeah.
Long storied, wonderful career here in Salem. And he is attention to detail.
Yeah.
He's an attention to detail person. Yeah. And so I'm just making fun of you attorneys because it's so easy.
Well, and I enjoy that. I make fun of attorneys too, and I am one.
All right, I interrupted your story. Keep going. So you want to deconstruct some legal problems, reconstruct some organization.
Right. Dan, I figured it would be a short-term thing. I suspended, so I had nothing to do except fight for, you know, not into jail because I'd been indicted wrongfully. And so I, in the midst of that, Ken hired me to do that as a consultant. I did that. And then after we won the criminal trial and I was exonerated, Ken called me up and said, look, I need a COO, chief operating officer, and you did a great job helping me. So will you work full time? I said, yeah, as long as I don't have to move away from my home state, I'll commute. And so that's what I did for about 8 months. And then the board decided that they needed somebody Ken was handling the president's job and the chairman's job and the CEO's job. And he's a volunteer, doesn't take any money for it.
Oh, my.
Wrote a great book called Rise of the Servant Kings. And he doesn't, all that money goes back into Promise Keepers. He's one of the most giving guys I've ever met. So any listeners out there who are thinking, you know, I'd like to know what it means to be a biblical man. What does biblical manhood look like? Go ahead and get Ken's book, Rise of the Servant Kings. You can, you know, get it through that website, Rise of the Servant Kings, or the Promise Keepers website, promisekeepers.org. It's a great book. And in fact, Ken and I were talking, I don't know, a year and a half ago before he wrote the book. And he said, you know, I'm going to write a book on what it is to be a biblical man. And I said, really? I didn't even know you could read. So, you know, nice. She didn't think it was that funny, but I did. And I really didn't think he had it in him to write the book. I just didn't. I mean, he's a great guy. He's a really good friend of mine. But that's a tough thing to write a book that on what it is to be a biblical man. And I got to tell you, when I read the manuscript, I called him up and said, okay, who ghost wrote this? This is really good, Ken. He said, I wrote it over 3 weeks. I just sat down and I wrote it. Wow. And it's a really good book. And that was the launch of Promise Keepers. And so July 31st, August 1st, next year, we've secured AT&T Stadium, home of the Dallas Cowboys. And we will have 80,000 men there singing, worshiping together. It's going to be an amazing time.
Give us the elevator speech and what kind of promises are we keeping?
Well, we're designed to be promise keepers.
Mm-hmm.
Men are designed to state what they believe and make a plan and then execute on that plan. That's in our DNA. And when we do that and we do it as servants, it invigorates those around us. When we're servant leaders and we help people see, here's the vision, here's how we get there, and then we help people walk that road, just like our Heavenly Father does to us, then people are inspired. Men are designed to keep promises to their upline. In my world, I mean, I've got a duty to discharge to Buck Compton and those men of the 506th Parachute Infantry Regiment, Easy Company, Band of Brothers, because they spoke greatness into my life. They took time to teach me and mentor me and help me. They're gone, but I'm still here. And so when you honor your upline, you always inspire your downline. Mm-hmm. When people see that, and that it's not a... It's not about Vance Day. It's not about Promise Keepers. It's about men understanding their role. We're told we're toxic. That's just a bunch of manure, frankly.
Well, it does sound horribly sexist. You know, isn't that terrible that men, are you saying, for instance, Vance Day, I want you to get this on the record, we're on the airwaves, that men are not women? Are you saying that men are potentially different than women?
Exactly.
Oh.
I think it's a national, you know, and people get upset when I say this, but, you know, they want to focus on science. And I believe in science. I mean, I come from a scientific, my father was a physician. My wife is a nurse. She's a professional counselor. We understand science. Then why throw out science when it comes to a person's DNA? If somebody wants me to call them he or she or some other name, fine. I'll respect that individual choice. In the macro, and I love how Dennis Prager puts this. I was with my wife and I were at an event that was in Colorado Springs a couple weeks ago. And how he put it was really beautiful. He said, look, in the macro, I have very firm principles. Marriage is between man and a woman. That's what the subject was about. But he said in the micro, in the personal relationship, it's all about compassion. And when I have a personal relationship with somebody, they shouldn't ask me to give up my principles or else we won't have the relationship. He said, that's disgusting when people do that. I have family members who are on the left side of the Democratic spectrum. I love them. I work with them because on the personal level, it's about love and connection and respect. Don't ask me to give up my principles on the macro level, because that's wrong.
Because they're no longer returning the love and respect, mm-hmm. you know, for your values.
Well, and it's interesting because, you know, I like how Ravi Zacharias puts it. He says, you know, cultures organize themselves in three different ways. They're either theonomous cultures, which means guided by God's law, like India is a theonomous culture, or you're a heteronomous culture, which means that there's two types of laws. That's more of a dictatorship. There's the elites who tell you what to do, and there's the masses below. And so there's two rules of law there.
Yeah, we don't want that.
No, we don't want that. And then there's the autonomous cultures. And when I ask somebody, so which are we? They always say we're autonomous. And I said, that's right. We are self-governing. We should be self-governing. And being self-governing, then we have certain rights, and those rights have collateral responsibilities. So why is it when I exercise my autonomous freedom of speech to say I believe that marriage is between a man and a woman, that suddenly the government elites switch from an autonomous paradigm to a heteronomous paradigm, and they become the elites that get to tell me what to do, how to think, and when to express myself? See, that's not the way it's supposed to work in a constitutional republic. We're not organized that way, but that's what's happening. And so I think Promise Keepers, for me and me being involved, is an effort to say, look, men, you're not toxic. You should never put the word toxic in front of masculinity. It's like, because that word, if you understand what masculinity is, it's meant to be a blessing. It's not a bad thing. It's like love. Do you put rape in front of the word love? Vance, it's okay. It's rape love. No, that's ridiculous. If you understand what rape is and understand what love is, you'd never put those two words together. If you understood what masculinity really is, you'd never put the word toxic in front of it, because they're two separate, things.
We're all going to need a few minutes to digest that, Vance Day.
Yeah, that was deep.
Wow. Our guest in the studios today is Vance Day, president of Promise Keepers, former circuit court judge here in Marion County. And we got to take a quick break, but he's coming right back on 1430 KYKN.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
Welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart. We're talking to Vance Day here in the studio. And Vance went through 4 years of literal trials, emotional, spiritual trials, in a case where we have religious persecution. Honestly, I'd like to say it another way. I wish it were not so. But we have state-sponsored religious persecution in Oregon. It's simply unacceptable. I mean, it should have shocked us all, and Vance, you said earlier in the hour about how people who weren't even in your side of the political spectrum were saying you're getting railroaded, right? And because you can't complain and prosecute somebody for having a belief system that has nothing to do with the job you're hired to do, right? We all have a constitutional right to the free exercise thereof of our religion. And here he is, and he says, well, I don't want to do same-sex marriages because it's contrary to my belief system. Mm-hmm. Nothing in his job description that says that he even has to perform marriages. There's a personal option. Everybody should have just respected that decision. Where was the respect for the freedom and the diversity of thought and all those things? And it just doesn't exist. And this is the question I had earlier, I did not ask you. So when on the cusp of statute of limitations and you get indicted by the Department of Justice, who is the governor?
Governor Brown.
Governor Brown, I heard of her.
Yeah.
Who is the attorney general?
Ellen Rosenblum.
Okay, I heard of her too. All right, just curious. Just want to make sure we got that out because we're going to reelect somebody who has leadership issues, ethic issues, and persecution of Christian beliefs. And you think you have to go to China for that, but you only have to go to Marion County. As a sitting judge as well.
Well, yeah, like, that's the, you know, when people would come up to me and say, Judge, if this can happen to you, it can happen to anybody.
Amen.
True.
And they're right on that. And for those listeners who are out there who are, you know, who may disagree with me on the nature of marriage, you know, that's a debate we should have. There's nothing wrong with that debate. And we can have mutual respect when we talk about the difference of opinion. But let's not weaponize the criminal justice system in order to destroy an opponent simply because they have a different view than, say, the United States Supreme Court does on that. As a judge, I had certain responsibilities, and I would and did my job honorably, and I would uphold what the Oregon Supreme Court or the United States Supreme Court said. I'd follow that.
That was your job.
Right. But don't tell me that I have to celebrate something that violates my liberty of conscience. It's not about my friends who are gay or lesbian. It's not. They know me. They know that I love them, that I respect them. We may have a difference of opinion, but that wasn't what it was about. It was about, you know, in essence, telling me as an employee of the state, you have no right to liberty of conscience in that way.
So was it after this that it doesn't seem to be sticking that you had the other allegations, you know, with the I know you're involved in veterans, mm-hmm. and you had a big heart, and you're trying to serve, and this is how I see it, and I don't need to defend you because I wasn't there, and I don't know the facts. But it feels like you're trying to build a relationship, and you're in the process of this veterans court that you founded and got the grant for and so forth. That all came to pass to come up to be nothing.
Yeah, well, it's the first time that we could find, I mean, my attorneys could find, and I had a lot of attorneys, frankly, too many. Love them all, but gosh darn it, mm-hmm. expensive. But in the history of the United States, where a person was indicted for being in the room when a third party showed a felon a weapon. I mean, think about that. So you're sitting in a room 20, 30 feet away doing something totally separate. Somebody walks in and shows a felon a weapon. The felon picks up the unloaded gun for 30 seconds, puts it back in the box. And then the person who's in the other side of the room gets indicted for aiding and abetting a felon in possession of a firearm. You got to tell me that's a pretty darn big stretch because
that's your taxpayer dollars at work, folks. And if you're not enraged, you should be, especially if you care about how your tax dollars are spent. We're in our last minute, Vance. Tell us the last bit we want to know about Promise Keepers. What should we look for?
Look, you know, for your listeners who are thinking that, gosh, I know some guys who need to really understand who they are mm-hmm. and have a revitalization about what masculinity means. Then go to promisekeepers.org. Go to the website, take a look at it. Look at what we're doing in Dallas, July 31st, August 1st next year. And it'll also be simulcast. So come join us. It's going to be an awesome event.
Promisekeepers.org. I see Promise Keepers, and I'll tell the story sometime. But when I put that ring on Linda's finger, I felt I made some promises to God and to Linda that I'm responsible for. And exactly. The same thing is possible when we have kids. So thank you for being here. Wish we had another hour. Perhaps you'll come back. And thanks. We're going to hold you to writing that book, Vance
yes.
Day.
Thanks,
Judge Vance Day joining us. Thank you. We'll do it again tomorrow. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Morn, and you're listening to 1430 KYKN.
This has been Lynn Fenton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Morn, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.